One is from the noun part of it. It's called fight and prolonged struggle. The verb sense of it is to fight, to contend, to do battle, to come into collision, and to clash. It's a very complicated thing if you look at this conflict. But roughly we can divide this conflict into two parts. Classify the two different parts. One is the external conflict. Those things which are in relationship with others or outside things. It's like things like when you talk about conflict, it's warfare. Sometimes when it comes to our mind, it's revolution, rebellion, street fights, even fights on front of the pubs. It's got to do with conflict. If there's no conflict, we wouldn't have these sort of things. And road rage is still conflict. And sometimes when we argue with friends, it's just the same thing. It's caused by a sort of conflict. And there are too many to list. With us, every day we face conflicts. Every second, every minute, we do have conflicts. But the most important conflict of all is this internal conflict within ourselves. The way we struggle with choices, we choose things, with selections, things like that. Struggle with our likes and dislikes. Struggle with our doubts as well. We've got a certain way of thinking, and then comes this information which is contradicting to our way of thinking. Then we start to look or think, am I right or not? But sometimes before we can settle for a new viewpoint or persist in our viewpoint, there's this moment and this doubt is around, and the mind just is vibrating in a very different way. That is that sense of conflict. So if you're talking about a Buddhist viewpoint, we should always go back to the most important person in Buddhism. It's not you, not me, it's the Buddha. So, what has the Buddha said about all these things? What I think mainly he says is bad. But there are some good in it too. When you talk about it being bad, the Buddha calls it the evil phenomena. Right? If it's good, it means that when we use it as a verb, that this conflict internally, that means we can make use of it as a struggle against evil. Not the devil, but evil. Evil meaning anything which arises from our greed or our hatred or our ignorance. Now, in order to see all these things, we got to look into, well, the way conflict, what are actually conflicts or how they arise. Talk about conflict in war. All these conflicts, they are different. Every day we've been through a few million conflicts in our mind, but they are all different. But they share a similar pattern of development. It comes to that in similar ways. And sometimes when we look at this conflict, especially the external ones, and if we are involved in it, we seem to think that the other party is responsible, or the other party is always the one to provoke all these things. But we got to think otherwise. Sometimes there are certain things which are there, or certain things which happen. It's us, our own self, that comes into agreement or disagreement with it. In other words, when we start to react, and reacting in an unfavorable way, or what we call it, reacting in an unskillful way, right? Put in Pali is akusala. When we react in an unskillful way, then the result will be what we call tearing us apart. Most of the time, within ourselves, is this pulling and pushing. What we like and what we dislike. Now, when you have this push and pull, then that is exactly what he called the action of conflict. In the sutta on, in the discourse on dependent arising, the Buddha has three different ways of putting things, and one of them is he told about the very practical approach on it, on this sort of way how we get into the state where people take up swords and sticks. Now when you look at this olden language of taking up swords and sticks, it means the way people fight and kill each other, go into battle and warfare. So the Buddha put it this way, he says, in order to have this evil phenomena that is into another fight and have warfare, there must be safeguarding. Give an example of, you know, this possession of ours, and we own things and so on. Safeguarding. Now this can also be something more abstract. Safeguarding of our treasured possessions. The most treasured possessions we have is our viewpoint, right? Our opinions and so on. So before we can safeguard, it comes from our stinginess. Not willing to give up. Right? And from the before, and from this, where does stinginess come from? It comes from our possessiveness. And this possessiveness comes from our attachment. And the attachment comes from our desire and lust. This desire and lust comes from decision making. And the decision making comes from gain. And the gain comes from pursuit. And pursuit comes from craving. And where does craving start? We don't look at others, and look at this people we call ourselves. Our body and mind. From this person, he develops craving, and of develops craving, he wants just pursuit, want to go and look for something. But after something, then he starts to have that gain. And when he starts to have gain, then he can decide decision making on what to do with the gain, or having more gain and so on. Then as you want the more gain, desire and lust starts. And from desire and lust, you get more and more things. All human nature is such that you get attached to things and cling on to things. You become getting very possessive about things. This is already strong clinging. And because of strong clinging, we do not want to give up. Do not want to give up the stinginess. And from the stinginess, we start to safeguard our thing. I got plenty of wealth, so I want to keep all my money to myself. So what I do? What do? If there are all thieves around, then I build a wall in my house. I build all these grills and so on, so that people can't come and bring it. But if people were to come and try to get my things, then I'll fight them. I keep a few guns in my house. I shoot them. But now, this sort of things do not happen if the other side doesn't. If there's no other parties. If you are alone in this world, you got all the possess, all the things, you know, everything you have, you don't have to worry about this. Trouble is, nature is not so ideal. There will be other parties. And the other parties share our craving. It shares our pursuit as well. It shares our gains as well. Share our decision making and everything as well. But attachment, possessiveness, stinginess. But the trouble, they don't have it. So they can't safeguard what they don't have. And if they start to have this attachment and possessiveness, they want to look at our thing. So what they do is, they like to acquire what is not theirs. Right? And because of that, then the thing, the pulling and the pushing, so evil phenomena starts. They go for swords and sticks. Right? Nowadays it's not swords and sticks anymore, they go for bombs. So that's why this world is very, very seldom peaceful. Of course, I talk about the internal conflicts a bit later, but this is exactly what's happening with external things. And can we avoid it or not? If you listen to the radio or read newspapers every year around Christmas time, what do you read? There's particular things from religious leaders. Right? Every Christmas Eve, I seem to get the news that these religious leaders, you know, especially in Australia, I don't know about other places, but I know this thing. Everybody will come and tell you that the world can be peaceful if you belong to the religion and follow what they say. And sometimes even the Dalai Lama got trapped into it, trying to give his teaching and make sure that the world is a bit more peaceful. But these religious people and these religious ideas had been on for ages. Right? Well, is the world much peaceful place or not? In the past, they blamed the communists. Right? Or those heathens, the non-God believers, they are all horrible people. And now the communists are gone. Is the world peaceful or not? People are more religious nowadays. Right? They have strong faith and strong beliefs. But is this world a lot peaceful or not? More peaceful or not? Then they start to blame the Muslims. They blame everybody else. Now, whatever it is, these religious people can talk, but nothing can be done. Because the way they go about asking people to be, you know, the way they say, in order to be peaceful, you must believe in something and follow the same way of life, right? So that we can have a more peaceful world. But you look back in history, there are times in this world when certain large area of a certain continent, say Europe, they belong to one single religion. But they belong to under one religious leader. Right? But still, there were conflicts. They were still fighting. When the Pope was ruling virtually the spiritual head of England around 1066, if you know, 1066 is a very important date. That's the year when King William invaded England. At the time, England was under a very religious king, and King William was also a very religious person. So these two religious people who believed the same God and the same teacher, they came into collision. Thus, belief in religion helped it or not, or believing in a sort of spirit helped it or not. So you got to see these sort of things. Now, during the Buddha's time, Buddha have encountered this sort of conflicts as well. In the teachings, in the suttas, you find that there's one particular sutta where the Buddha was trying to do something about a quarrel between his own clan, the Sakyas, and the neighboring country, called the people who call the Kosalas. The Sakyas and the Kosalas shared a river. And they took the water. Both of them tried to use the water to irrigate their fields, right, in both sides of the river. And every now and then they have got this fight because somebody took more water than they should, or they demanded more water, or tried to make the other person take less water. So every now and then, not only the water, but from that water problem, it evolved into a lot of this problems. So that they are always at war. So come to the stage where this Kosala went into alliance with some very powerful kings and tried to run over the Sakyas, the Buddha's country. So when the Buddha heard about it, you know that this is not a good thing. Right? When they come over and they start to have war, a lot of people will die, will get hurt and all this. So the Buddha tried to stop the conflict, and three times he did. He sat under a dead tree, and then there's a story goes, and when the invading army comes, they dare not go beyond the Buddha, so they went back, and after going back, the problem starts again. Those warrior class people are very, very arrogant. They got very strong viewpoints. So maybe, you know, after the withdrawal, they will say, okay, I dare you to come and find me again. So they come again. So three times the Buddha sat. And the fourth time the Buddha didn't, because he knew that is inevitable. When you have got people who are hard-headed, stubborn, and all these things, we cannot avoid conflict. And in this case, avoiding his country being run over by the other army. So that's the thing, the way we look at it. External conflicts cannot be put out just by the actions of some people, a small section of people. So you think that we are very peaceful people, just try next time when the Americans are bombing Iraq, just go there and stand where the bombs are. I'm very peaceful. I stand for peace, right? God will protect me and all this thing, and see whether you come back alive or not. So trying to go into this sort of peacemaking thing is useless. Because over the years we have got the League of Nations, we've got United Nations, we've got all these things. We're still having wars. Still having fights. And the more they talk about things, the more they do about things, the more intense the wars and fights become. Right? So when you look at the external things, these are the things which we cannot do it single-handedly, neither can we do it as a small group. Even with the army of the US of A, they still can't maintain peace in certain places. Let's see what happens in Iraq. I mean, this Iraq is a very good lesson for everybody. They go there with all the weaponry and everything. They still can't stop the Shiites from fighting the Sunnis. Because of the strong hatred. So all these things, it goes back. If you want to really, really have something to do with achieving peace or reducing this conflict among or between parties, then we got to look at some other ways. The popular way of doing is, it's good for television, it's good for the media to find that this Pope or this Lama comes in and say, I represent peace, and you all should live in peace here, what's called it, ever after, right? But nobody ever does that. In fact, they laugh at them. So what we can do is, if we really want to avoid this conflict, we got to look more into this internal thing. Look at where this conflict starts. It's not something which believing in a God will help. If believing in gods or God or spirits help in all this thing, then there will be a lot of peaceful and happy people in this world. Because if you look at the statistics, nearly 2.5 billion people on earth, or more roughly, half the people on earth believe in gods, one god or another. But why are they still fighting? So it proves to us that this belief system or belief in God and things like that will not work. The only way it will work is for us to be able to be aware of things. Look at where this conflict starts. Before we can have external conflicts, there are already internal conflicts. The internal conflict starts with a human being. Now look at this thing. You can make it as a group. You can make it as a person. Remember, a person, when they start to get this craving, when they look at this craving, that's where all this conflict and evil phenomena. The evil phenomena, whatever bad things we do to other people. So look within us and find out what we can do about it. Now, before we can start to do things, you've got to be aware of how things start. No point telling you you are wrong, you may be angry, you come and provoke me and all these things. It's better to look into this particular person. And the Buddha's teaching, if you want the Buddhist views, is most of the Buddha's teaching is directed to a person. And this person is the one who is reading the thing, who is understanding the thing, and who is practicing the thing. It's no point telling within your family, if you get a boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife who is having problem with you, says you are the problem. That's what we normally do with it. He makes me angry, she makes me angry, the house makes me angry. So we constantly push things outside. But once you have this anger and this likes and dislikes, that's where conflict starts. Remember what I said just now. Okay, so in order to do that, we got to really understand all these things. And that's where the most basic of all Buddha's teaching lies. The teaching tells you about craving. If there's no craving, the world will be very peaceful. I mean, right now here, none of us have any craving. That's why we sit down peacefully. But the moment somebody gets a handful of cash and throw around, if the craving arises, no, if you're not craving, you still sit down quietly and let the, all the money fall down. But if there's craving, you find everybody be jumping up and grab. And then not only grab, but you can see, as you grab, you can push the other person aside and grab more. All these things, Buddha is never wrong. So we got to know that. In the absence of craving, we live in harmony. When there's something outside which brings out our craving, then we get problems. So we got to be very, very careful about this arising of craving. Now most people will say that without craving this world cannot go round. Without craving, how can you build all this beautiful house, all this big universities and all these things? You say yes, that's with craving. But with craving comes also the byproduct. The byproduct is strife. If there's no craving, there's no strife. So you know, if there's extreme craving, there's extreme strife. And if the Buddha talks about something like middle path, then you got to, as lay people, be able to balance those two out. Make sure that how can we minimize strife by minimizing this our craving. As human beings, there will be craving within us, inside us. If you don't crave for one thing, you crave for another. Those people are saying, okay, I don't crave for food, but when they start to crave for music. Or those people who say I don't crave for music, you know, those people who don't drink alcohol will say I smoke. Those people who don't smoke will say I drink alcohol. But all these things, there are this inherent desire in us. All these things, we are born with it. So we got to do something about it in order to stop all this conflict. Now, go back to what is said about the internal conflicts before. Is not being able to deal with what is right and what is wrong. When you have got a very set viewpoint of what is right, and something comes as against our viewpoint, what happens straight away? Nothing is wrong. Yeah, conflict and wrong. You don't say that you're wrong. You say that is wrong. What? Why do we say that is wrong? Because we cling on to this viewpoint. If somebody is there and he likes wine, and then someone came and say that is no good, then what happens? The guy will defend to the teeth, right? That drinking of that wine is good. It's good for your heart. It's good for your kidney. It's good for your lungs. It's good for social things. You know, with all these things, nothing can happen. Blah blah. We're happy. We enjoy that. Right? So we are defending. There you are. You talk about defending. Safeguarding. And what happens if the other person is like us? So you start to say, your argument is no good. As far as you know, this might cause heart problem. Again, all these things, right? It's all different viewpoints. So what happens? It flares out to be a open fight. Maybe a verbal fight. Then if you happen to do in the pub and everybody got a bit of alcohol in them, okay, let's go outside there and punch out, especially with the men. Nowadays the women are doing that too, unfortunately. So, but before this external conflict can start, it's the internal side. We have got this set viewpoint and saying what we do is like is right. What I like is good. Right? So good and bad, right, likes and dislikes. From there we develop the idea of right and wrong. Anything which is against our notion of likes and dislike, of our liking, or what we think is right, it's considered to be wrong. And when it's wrong, we defend. So the internal conflict starts before the external one. Inside there, you're in push and pulling yourself. So, again, you have got to do something about it to stop all these things. And how to do it? Buddha says the practice of Buddhism is got nothing more than observing and investigating. Just find out where it comes from and how it goes on and what happens when it goes on. It goes on, who gets the problem? Now when you look at the whole thing, how we get into this problem is going from this person. We have a certain, we operate in a certain way, right? The way we operate is with this body. We have got the ability to see, ability to hear, and so on, right? They call it the six sense bases of the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body and the brain. It's through these sort of things that we receive a lot of signals, right? Signals from outside. Signals in the form of sight, signals in the form of sound, signals in the form of smell and taste, and so on. When we have this, receive these signals, then we start to get an idea of what they are. Or we start to recognize them. We recognize a sound, recognize a smell. If it's a perfume, it's a nice smell, we say. Right? If it's somebody comes from the other end of human being, we say, you know, everybody starts to put the nose like that and make sure that it's not so nice. So we have this perception that things, we see the thing and we got some ideas. And once we get this idea, then these ideas give us whether we have come to the notion where this thing is nice or not nice, or pleasant or unpleasant. And with the pleasant things, we start to want more of it. With the unpleasant thing, we start to want less of it. But unfortunately, the nature of existence is such that we cannot choose whatever we want. Things change. Right? The first, the what we call the universal characteristics in Buddhism, things change. Impermanence, anicca. Things do not have essence, or it's beyond our control. Anatta, right? We call it non-self. And when these things, we want permanence when there's impermanence, and we want to control when we cannot control, then it clashes with our wants, our habits, and so on. And therefore, we start to develop this conflict within us. You want something nice, you want to be comfortable, it's not comfortable, you can't feel comfortable, then you get problem. So with all these things, then we get a lot of problems. We want something good, it's not there. We want something bad, else we want something bad to happen, it's always there. So what happens? They're being pulled and tortured. And when we start to do that, then we are allowing this conflict or this evil phenomena to happen within us. When it happens within us to a certain intensity, then we push all these things outwards. When we get angry, how often do we sit down there and just kill ourselves with the anger? Seldom. You know, you've got to make sure that the face is there, the expressions are there to show people that I'm angry. Give it out to somebody. If we are fearful, we also show that we are fearful. Everything is that we affect other people with it. And when you start affecting other people with it, if they don't like it, then you start the external conflict. So internal conflict, external conflict. And some things which you don't like. Now, for example, like how war starts. You look at the present Iraqi war. I mean, the problem in Iraq now is a big problem. How it started? Oil, the screed. You know, there's something craving. Sometimes, you know, a lot of people in our country, we look at it differently. We forget that there's oil. We call it oil, going for oil is conspiracy theory. But the most people will say we don't like the situation there. We don't like this person called Saddam Hussein. And then from there they start to develop stories. All these things the Buddha said, they develop stories to say that okay, the fellow has got some weapons of mass destruction. Goes now telling people, and oh, that guy got weapons of mass destruction. Now from a Buddhist point of view, talking about things which are not true, I mean they don't know, and nobody knows, but then they are so certain that they got this weapon of mass destruction, and that's scandal, that's lies they're telling. So again, when they're telling lies, those poor fellows who propagate all these things are getting into the state of stress, so the conflict within them, because they do not know and yet they say that they know. Then after that, build up a lot of hatred. Okay, look at this. Telling lies, is it good in Buddhism? Hatred, developing hatred, is it good in Buddhism? So we all get this hatred. And then say, okay, he should go. So go there, send people there, and get hold of him. And everybody knows that you want to get rid of that guy is not that easy. You've got to go through a lot of things. And when they send the army there, do you just go there to the palace there and get, hey, Saddam comes out, I'm going to take you. It doesn't. You got to go there and bomb somebody. And there, when you bomb somebody, you do some killing. And it's killing good in Buddhism. Right? So you see, you have already done a few things. Right? Then after you get hold of him, what happens was, there's this different factions fighting. You know that traditionally they've been hating people. One group hates the other very much. Although they belong to the same religion, they pray to the same God, they still hate. Right? Because the religion doesn't get rid of hatred. Right? So when they have got that, then these clever people say, okay, maybe we just manipulate them so that they fight among themselves and we stop the problem. They kill them, then kill them themselves. So we propagate all these things. And when they kill too much, public opinion say you're making a mess there, so they try to bring the people there to do something about it. So a lot of poor Americans got killed. So you kill the Arabs, you kill Saddam Hussein, you kill the Americans, you kill maybe some Brits, right? And of course no Australian got killed, so over here we are not so concerned over it. But the moment one day if one Australian get killed in the streets by those warring parties, then there will be a problem here. So you see, this conflict, who gains at the end? They might get a bit of oil. So why does the American want to do it? Go to this one. They are not guarding their own things, but they are actually working on the invasion. Right? I mean, I'm not talking politics here, but isn't it a fact? Everybody knows it. Right? So you see how, that's how the operation. I mean, because somebody wants to invade, and so on. Now, can we stop it? Maybe, if you get all the Americans to think like Buddhists, maybe we might stop it. But the trouble, they haven't gone to the stage yet. So that's why when we come to this external thing, we say we are powerless against all these things.
Can we use the situation of Tibet and China as the background of discussion on this attitude conflict?
I think, to me, that's why I respect the Dalai Lama. When he talks about peace, he's really a man of peace. See, for years ago, he was being sort of pushed out of his own country. Right? Of course, he went voluntarily. Otherwise, he wouldn't be out there. Right? For years, he's trying to go back. Of course, it's not nice to leave your own country, right? And leave your people there. So, now, but the thing is, again, being a man who has got Buddhist practice and a man who's really believe in peace, he look at it in a very, very different way. The world tells him, no, we are behind you. Right? Go back, you fight the blinking Chinese. You kill the real Chinese, it's alright. You know, go back to Tibet and you become a king again and everything will be alright. Very, very good offers, you know. Very good attraction, isn't it? Very attractive. But what he knows is, if he were to go back forcefully, what's going to happen is there's going to be this conflict. And this conflict is going to be a warfare. Right? The Chinese, of course, wouldn't want him to go back. And if he forced himself back, he got to borrow the army from America, from England, from Europe, and all these things. Right? They got all this army. And then to go and fight the thing so that the Chinese get out of Tibet. Right? And when he does that, what happens? Or when there'll be a fight there, and there'll be dead Chinese, dead Tibetans, and dead foreigners. Right? So for years, he did not want to go back by force. Right? He did not want to go back to say, okay, I go back and become a king, a god king, and so that I can rule over my people, and they can be Tibetans, live a Tibetan culture, culture happily ever after, and so on. Right? For nearly 40 years, I think it's 40, 50 years. Right? He didn't. And until now, he's still trying to negotiate. Now, that is an extremely good way of getting out of conflict. When there is something, difference of opinion, it's no point coming to collision. It's going there to understand. Hopefully that one person will take one step back, the other person will take another step back. You take a few more steps back and a few more steps back, peace will come to this world. Right? And that's how the Dalai Lama is trying to work. So, but the whole thing is, after all the years, if we talk about peace, he's lost grip in some of his people. Right? Those people who are not directly influenced by him. So they start to think, okay, if the old man won't come back, or won't demand, or won't come back by force, let's bring some riots around. So this is the best time, is it, to bring some shame to the Chinese, to bring some awareness to all these things. But unfortunately, in Tibet itself, those people who believe in these sort of things, they start the riot. And in the riot, who suffers? The Tibetan suffers. The Chinese suffers. And they might kill a few Chinese, but the Chinese government is not. Again, the Chinese government are not Buddhists. Right? Don't forget that. So they come in, grab you Tibetans, put you in jail, and then hang you upside down for a while, see whether you change or not. Right? So, again, it's just tit for tat. Right?
The Buddhist culture, they have a lot of respect for the monks.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do we view those Tibetan lamas or monks that were caught photographed in the riots, being aggressive, throwing things and causing damage? Are they still monks by definition?
Yes. You see, don't forget monks are also human beings. Like, we don't think of monks as enlightened beings. Monks and enlightened beings are different. The monks are there because they want to be enlightened. They still have got all this greed and hatred and all these things, right? There are different standards among monks. When you put Dalai Lama, he's already really, you know, put the high S. We call it high up. He's really high up there. The way he talks and the way he reasons things are very different from the ones at the bottom. Right? And for what you know, those people, those so-called monks who went in, they don't even know one end of the Buddha from the other. Right? They might know how to turn the prayer wheel and say, "Oh, Mani Padme Hum," and that's all. Nothing of the Buddha's teaching is gone in there. Right? So it could be that, the sort of monks. Right? You find that the monks who are really high up there, they will never advocate to have violence. Right? Because this non-violence or ahimsa is one of the Buddha's principles, and it's being promoted in what we call in the Eightfold Path, in the right thoughts, the thought of non-violence, ahimsa. Right. And in the war of independence, the struggle for independence by the Indians, right, Mahatma Gandhi, he followed this principle of ahimsa, non-violence. And that's why for the country to fight for their independence, so few people died. So you can see these sort of things, how we use Buddhist principle to achieve a lot of things. A lot of people say, okay, if I don't agree with you, I fight with you. But the Buddha says, well, if you don't agree with a person, fighting may be one of the ways, but it may not, it's not all the way. It's just one of the ways, not all the ways. So there are many, many ways we can look at things. If you fight, there's aggressiveness. Take away your aggressiveness, what happens? If the other person is still aggressive, we can think, okay, I walk away from it. If you want to think that you're right, I can challenge you and tell you that you're wrong. But if you're already fixing your ways, right, to say that I'm absolutely right, nothing can change me, then what the Buddhists would, what the Buddhists normally do is say, okay, you have your views. So you walk away from it. I'm not going to convert you. So this sort of conversion thing, converting people's views in a very strong way, in a confrontational way, is not what the Buddha advocated. You see in the scripture how the Buddha convinced people. People who came and want to find faults with him. But he didn't say, oh, you found me, find fault with me, okay, come. He didn't say that. He said, okay, sit down there, let's talk about it. What's wrong with you? Right? What do you want to know? What's wrong? What do you think wrong is wrong with me? So the fellow say, okay, this. Then the one by one, the Buddha explained it. So that is the whole thing, because the Buddha is a person of wisdom. He's a wise man. So it's through that wisdom that we can get out of this conflicts. But there are many times you can see, you know, in old Chinese history, you find that during the warring period, there are also stories like that. People war, and this guy goes there to this country, talk about it, and then ask for peace, and go talk about it, ask for peace, ask one, each one to just go back one step. Once you start to go back one step, there is peace. But in modern day world, we don't advocate that. Like we are saying, power. I show you my power. If you don't like me, I see what I can do. So let's have a fight and see who wins. So this is the way it is. If we want to keep on going that way, one fine day we're going to see half the planet blown away by nuclear warfare. So the thing is, how then to work on these sort of things? We say go back to work on our own conflicts. If we start to have problem with our neighbors, the friends, and all these things, then we cannot go and tell people to have world peace, because it's just the same thing magnified a few hundred, a few million times. So we got to come to terms with a lot of things first. Come to terms with our own existence. Understand the nature of things. Understand impermanence. Understand this non-self or lack of control. Understand these imperfections and so on. Once you understand it, then you become more acceptable of things. You can accept a lot of things better. Accept a lot of situations better. Now, when we sit there and then somebody came and sit next to us and push us to one side, what happens? Can bum you? Can you sit in the space? But actually, are we that really, really that uncomfortable? Maybe you just go like this way. Let the people have the space. So if we can do that and do it willingly, then we don't have problem at the time. So it's better of being acceptable. And from this acceptance, we start to gain tolerance. Our attitude becomes more tolerant. We tolerant that, okay, they may have a need for it, they may have a want for it. If I can afford to really let them have a little bit, then what's the problem? So we don't safeguard our possession. In this case, we safeguard our 2.5 centimeters of space. So it's this stinginess. Now, how to counter this stinginess? The Buddha taught about dana, generosity. To a lot of people, dana means to bring food to the monks and share food with the monk and then come back with a bloated tummy. that's one of the aspects of dana. But the real dana starts from here. To let go of this stinginess within us. If I've got, the usual way we look at it, if I've got five things, if my neighbor has got none, Can you don't have to give everything? Some people are stupid. They say, okay, give all to your neighbor. That's being very stupid. At least give one to your neighbor. But you can give one, then maybe further down the track, give two to your neighbor. But usually we do not. We give the neighbor if you like the neighbor. If I don't like the neighbor, what happens? You're getting nothing. Go and starve yourself. Okay? So this is the sort of things we operate. So what you've got to do is get rid of stinginess, is to make sure that if we can let go of certain things, right, don't cling on to our possessions too strongly. You may have it today, tomorrow you might not have it, if we can understand that sort of thing. So if we start to be less stingy, and usually for most people it's easier to let go of the stinginess on possession. There's material things. It's easy for you to say, okay, you're hungry, I give you $2 to go and buy, you know, half a piece of bread or something like that. But when it comes to these ideas and so on, we are even more stingy. Right? Because we cling on to them. And I hold on to this proper view, this particular views. You come and talk to me and want to try to make me think differently. I'm so stingy of letting it go that I cling on to it even further. Right? So these are sort of things when you start to do that, then we bring around a lot of evil states. So we got to be careful of how we allow ourselves to go into that state. And of course, you know, you guys heard a lot about meditation. How many meditate with Chen Hong? You all better do. You want to get rid of conflict within you, you just go and do that. See, it's a very simple word. Developing mindfulness. When you develop mindfulness, that means you start to develop awareness of things. Awareness of things, you can start with awareness of how you act and react. See, when somebody come and grab your things, what do? You get angry straight away. But then you start to say, okay, why do I get angry? Can I let go of the thing or not? All these things, these ideas. Right? And sometimes when people come and attack our principles, right, they live against our principles or tell you to do certain things which you think is wrong to do, what is the reaction? It doesn't mean that you have got to do it, but look into here, what's happening here. Supposing you don't drink any alcohol at all, good Buddhist, fifth precept, right? I don't touch alcohol, I don't even smell it. Even cooking, and I don't put even one teaspoon of alcohol in my food. All right. Then somebody came and just put a bottle of wine in front of you. Okay, let's come and share this wine. What happens here? It doesn't mean that you got to go and drink with them. But the moment the fellow plonk the wine in front of you and tell you, let's share the wine, that revulsion, you know, comes out. How can you, I'm a good Buddhist, how can you think that I want to drink this dirty thing? See, when you start to think that, the mind starts to work, and there's this conflict. I think that not drinking is good, and you bring this horrible thing to me and explain to it. But a lot of people who have no principle say, okay, yeah, good, I'll share with you. But it's not that, you know, if you don't drink, you don't drink at all. But don't allow that sort of hatred to arise in you. Right. So if you can do that sort of thing, or when you're a very clean person, tidy person, and you get this sloppy friend of yours to come and stay 2 days in your flat, what happens? You have to leave all the wet towels around, and then after having shower and all this things around, no. The first thing we do is, you know, getting upset with it. Right. And that being upset is the beginning of conflict in a small way. And if it stays for another 2 more days, then it's the thing and spill thing on the stove and didn't wipe up again. You start to think, there you are, the wet towels, the wet thing on the bathroom floor, and then this keep on adding. And even though you don't say anything, it's already pushing and pulling you inside. And the moment the fellow goes away, he says, I'll never invite the fellow back to my flat again. And you lose one friend. So if you are more tolerant, so after all, what is a little bit of inconvenience? Maybe the fellow put the wet towel, okay, I just put the towel outside and hang it out. So all these things, a simple thing, but we just are too stingy with our generosity. We are not generous in doing this sort of thing, not generous with our feelings and so on. So that's why you look at it now. The Buddha's training basically is to say we get rid of dukkha, but this conflict is one of the greatest dukkha we have at all. Because from this conflict will arise anger, fear, worry, disappointments, and all these things will come up to have a less harmonious community. But so when if we start to get rid of all this idea, become more generous, being able to look at our craving and all these things, go through, you know, it's not just one way of action, but have a few actions coming together, you find that this world is a much better world, because there's no more things stuck in your heart, right? And people seems to be a lot better. If you can accept people better, then you find that there are less horrible people in this world. If you start to think that everybody else is horrible, then there is a problem with you, and you got to start looking for the Buddha. But so it's a very, very important how we act, how we react, and going back to look at how to connect this body and mind of ours with craving. Now this part is already very much later. How to connect this, how this craving arises in us, and the craving arises is very simple. Through the things we, all the things we see, hear, smell, and all these things. And then with the brain working, we form thoughts and ideas. And from there, we start to go into a lot of attachment and clinging. Right? And start to think that, okay, I like these things more, and we develop that habit of wanting it more. We develop that intensity of viewing the thing as something good. And then from there, say, okay, it's my idea, it's my things. And anybody who comes into conflict with that, you get problem. So I'm quite sure you look at how we operate every day. Why some days are better for us and other days are worse for us is because we give way to a lot of this sort of things. We just allow ourselves to go into autopilot, and then things start to happen. You get caught in it, caught in that, opinions, views, and so on. Until towards the end of the day, we get very, very tired. And what happens when you really have too much of those stress and conflicts every day? And you sleep, you don't sleep well, you get nightmares, you get things. Next day, you woke up in an even worse state. So, you look at it, it's a lot of things got to do with our life, our own well-being. We cannot say that we're going to have a very good body without having a good mind. Usually, a good mind and a good body goes together. Maybe a good mind and a good body, you have a good mind, may not have a very healthy body, but at least we have a good mind. You can direct your life in a much better way. Not to say control things, but just go along with things. Look at the Buddha's teachings. He didn't ask us to go against. When you go against things, what happens? The word conflict again comes in. Go against, just struggling. If you go with it, then there's no struggle. There's no fight. So life is a process. It comes and goes. And when we start to get into that ability to go along with it, then there is no difficulties at all. It's because we don't want to. If you say, I don't like the sun come out in the east, I want it to come out in the west, you can spend the whole of your life stressing about it. And that's an extreme case. Right? But there are a lot of things which we being stupid or ignorant or deluded, we want it to be that way. I don't want to grow old. Okay? Now I look at it every day. I look at the mirror. I don't want to grow old, and all the wrinkles there. And then there are all these things coming in. It says, okay, you put this cream on, wrinkles will go off. You put the cream on, your face will be more glowing and all these things. But if I would not accept the fact that growing old means all these things, I'll be spending a lot of money buying these sort of things. And if the cream, not all the cream works. Ask any old guys who use that. They can tell you that it didn't work. Right? So if I buy that and just put on the smear on, everybody know that my mutton dress is a lamb, right? And it didn't work. What happens? I get really upset. There you go. Conflict. So we got to not want to go against nature. I can't say that I don't want to die. This is the ultimate question most of us got to face. But if you say that I don't want to die, then that person before he dies is going to get a lot of problems. But then you say that I'm accepting of it, it doesn't mean that I got to go and take a knife and cut slit my throat. Right? It's not that. It's just that I'm prepared for it. If it comes, I just go happily, rather than going unhappily. So this is the sort of thing. We got to be able to flow with nature. Anybody who go against nature will find that they are suffering. Now again, when you say about going with nature, it doesn't mean that they are sick. Now there are a lot of stupid people who do that. When they are sick, they say, okay, my karma, bad karma, that I get sick. Last life, you know, I got this such and such a thing left for this life, I got to get this sickness. So do nothing about it. Don't go and see a doctor. I sit down there and wear away my bad karma. You know, that's not a belief. And you find that there are, we don't lack this sort of belief. There are a lot of them around. And that's not the way either. The Buddha says, okay, you got to do your best. And when you're sick, go and see a doctor. See a doctor. If you can afford the best doctor and the best treatment, do it. Otherwise, to get the best way you can handle it, whether you see a Western doctor, you see a naturopath, or you see a Chinese doctor, it doesn't matter. Do something about it. When you've done something about it and the sickness doesn't go well, then accept it. So that's the way we teach, you know, people who are terminally ill. You got to die. You got to be sick. And it's so happened that you have got a sickness. If the fellow still asks, why me? Then it's a more difficult way. Right? So we do not, if we get it ourselves, we do not ask the sort of question, why must it be me? Why not my enemy? Right? So this is the way we deal with things. Go along with it, but at the same time, go along with it smoothly. And we've got to understand that life is, a whole of our life is process. It's just a process. You're getting old, you're getting sick, you're going to be dead, and in the meantime, there's a lot of suffering. You talk about samsara and going round and round. And for us who refuse to accept it or too deluded to see through all these things, as you go up, you have to go down, you suffer. When you go down, you have to go up again, suffer. Right? When you walk up, you know that you're up. You go down, you know that you're down. But so accept the whole thing. And when you accept the thing, there's no push and pull. With a minimum of pushing and pulling, there's little stress. And then, you know, when you go meditating and you sit down there and there's no stress whatsoever, that state is a beautiful state. Right? So we can do it. It's not necessary we must go and cross our leg, go to retreats and all these things. If we can come to terms with a lot of things, coming to terms means we are able to accept situations. Accept the fact that people have got different opinions from ours. It's not that they are right. Not to say that we must think that they are right. It's just that I've got my opinion, they also have got an opinion. And don't allow these two opinions to come into collision. Just know that that's the opinion, that's the opinion, and let it go. See, the beautiful thing in the development of Buddhism throughout the ages is because of this. You don't find that different sects or different traditions of Buddhists coming to fight. They have debates, right? In the early days, you know, they have got these various debates between this school and that school and that school. But there was never once where they come to fight. But they talk about it. And after the talk, if they refuse to accept the other person's views, what they do? Okay, I go back to my monastery, you go back to your monastery. Right? After that, it's let go until the next time. But if they were not to to have this sort of teachings behind them, but not to have the Buddha's teachings behind them and view conflict as something which is good, then what happens is they're going to have these things and then they say, I'm perfectly right, you are perfectly wrong, right? So I must subdue you, so that we all of us can have the same idea. Then what happens is there'll be somebody being hurt and somebody dead, and there'll be bad things written about Buddhism. So this is the beauty of our teaching, is that we accept the other person's views. And even sometimes when we cannot accept, we can also be tolerant. I don't like what you say, but I'll put up with it. That's another good point about it. Acceptance, tolerance. It doesn't mean we tolerate people, we follow them. It doesn't mean we accept others, we follow them. It's not that. We can have difference of opinions and we can live our separate lives. Okay, any questions so far?
Real life again.
Yeah?
Real life question again. In this real world, how would a perfect Buddhist country defend itself?
Well, I think a perfect Buddhist country doesn't have to defend itself.
So, based on the Buddhist idea, is being part of the army acceptable profession? Defending your country is a honorable duty.
Yeah, you're talking about these sort of things. Now, when you have nothing to defend, then can anybody attack us or not? There are people who attack the Buddha during his times in viewpoints. But you find that all his attackers eventually went back frustrated because they couldn't attack him. So this is the very important point there. Supposing I have hold a very strong viewpoint, you come and say, oh, Buddhism is no good. I get very angry with you. And then I try to argue with you. And if I'm bigger than you, you still say that Buddhism is okay. I just, you know, just get rid of you. But supposing you come and say Buddhism is no good, and I say, okay, I accept your viewpoints, but I'm not going to follow to think that you're right. Okay? But then it's a different thing when you come and say Buddhism is no good, I want you to become a Buddhist. Come and encroach into my personal rights. So in a world of imperfections, we should always try to tolerate as much as possible until do something. And doing something, if we do things unwisely, there'll be a lot of conflict. Now, let's go back to Tibet again. If Dalai Lama is not wise, he could have got into a third world war. Right? A lot of kids and things like that. He should be, by right, you should say, he should go back and govern his own country. Right? Everybody would be of that view. Right? Right?
Then
the world will come to chaos.
Because if you go back, China, Europe.
Yeah, that's why I said the Dalai Lama is a very, very wise person. Right? And he's a very compassionate person. That's why he has not gone back by force. Right? When he goes back, he gets the ego of becoming the ruler of Tibet again. Right? But the thing is, will he ever go back? So this conflict is fine.
Does it matter?
Yeah, that's right.
Ever go back?
It doesn't matter that Dalai Lama. So when you talk about this Buddhist, in this, you know, do the Buddhists have to defend the country? You got to look it from the Dalai Lama's point of view. Right? If you're going to have this, okay, you want to come and make me into Muslim or Christians or whatsoever, like you come with your force and all these things, what shall I do? So we can have many things. If we want to follow the worldly ways, okay, I get my allies and come and have a confrontation with him. But may not be a weapon confrontation, may not be a really active warfare, but we'll have a confrontation like they do in the Cold War. And that is one way of solving the thing. The other one is to say, okay, I try to talk to you. Maybe it'll change your mind. And if that doesn't happen, then I try to accept the fact and try to stall the whole thing. I mean, it's all these things can happen. Right? Depends on the situation and depends on the wisdom of a person. Right? So we cannot say that, okay, just because we are very peaceful people and people come and invade us, we should go and fight back. The fighting should be only the last resort. It doesn't mean that the Buddhist countries don't fight, don't defend their countries. They still do. But it's always done as a last resort. You very seldom see that those Buddhists go and invade other countries. Right? Except in the brief period when during the Thailand, there are this war between different Buddhists. But then they don't fight on the basis of Buddhism. It's not because of Buddhism that they're fighting. It's because of the king's greed, therefore he wants more territories, therefore they come in and fight the people and increase the share of the whole country.
There's a story about in World War II, the Japanese monk giving blessing to the kamikaze troops. So, is that something that you heard about?
Oh, they do. You see, it's part and you see the again. You talk about Japanese Buddhism. Right? A lot of Japanese Buddhism are quite far removed from the Buddha's teachings, and they are Buddhists, but they could be very different. And so there's a sect of quite a big sect of people who believe more in nationalism rather than Buddhism. Right? So that's why they have all these things happens. I read somewhere. It could be in the scripture or in the history of Buddhism that in Sri Lanka somewhere in the 1st or 2nd century there was this king who was a Buddhist, and he was trying to fight the Tamils. The Tamils and the Sri Lankans always come and invade them, and then this king went to fight and push them back. So he's got to go and fight them back. So after the battle he killed quite a few thousand Tamils. Then he asked his monk, he says, "No, have I killed a few thousand, I must be guilty." And the monk told him, and the monk must be a strange monk, he says, "Oh, your majesty, you didn't kill a few thousand people, you only killed 1.5 person. So the he says, only one Buddhist got killed, and half, the other half was going to become a Buddhist. Right? So I mean, these are the sort of ridiculous things people can come up with. Right? This is called justification. Right? In Buddhism, if we use justification, it doesn't really erase anything, our karma. Now, justification even goes to the extent that, you know, if I'm hungry, I can rob you. It's still not justifiable. So, we do not go into this justification at all. And if I go and rob you, it's because of my greed, therefore I rob you. So there's no justification. Whether I'm hungry or not, it's a different thing. And in the Buddhist things, we can never... You see, in the other religions, they talk about justifiable war. Right? The war can be justified. It's because, you know, you don't do this, you don't do that, therefore I go and invade you, I can kill your people. In Buddhism, we do not have that. So this is the way, it's because of the development of our way of thinking. Right? You find that in the history of mankind, there's not a single war which is carried out based on defending Buddhism. When the Muslims came over to India, India at the time, you know, they got a lot of temples under Nalanda. They went to Nalanda, and the monks, you know, if they say you want to kill me, kill me. Some ran away, but some they sit down there, and those Muslims just came and chopped their heads off. And same thing with Sri Lanka, when the Portuguese came over to Sri Lanka, they came over and they used the army to force people to convert. No, go ahead. When they do that, if they're going to be successful, they are going to be successful. If they are not going to be successful, they can never be successful. So you find that the Portuguese has gone away from Sri Lanka, the Dutch has gone away, the English has gone away, the Sri Lankan is still there, Buddhism is still there. So in a way, you know, you've got to believe that it's no point using force in conflicts. You can can always talk our way out. We can always convince others. Now, if you got the wisdom, you can convince others a lot better. It's because when we want to talk our way out, sometimes we use the same sort of mental state as the other person. And we confront the thing, and two strong views come together, there's sparks, and it's bound to be explosions. Okay? So, you got to be very careful with it. There's no way when you say, okay, this way works for this situation, it must work for the other situation. The only way is to be able to see ourselves and train ourselves to get the wisdom which the Buddha has. And to get that, we got to develop, or allow our mindfulness to develop, get into insight of things and understand things. And to deal with situations, we can either stay there and face it, or walk away from it. So it's up to our choice. Sometimes you want to walk away from it, you say, now, if I walk away from it, I'll lose my face. Lose face. Ah, there you are, the ego. So we got to be able to see these sort of things. Any more questions?
Annoys you all the time, but every time you get annoyed, you tolerate it. Every time you get annoyed, you tolerate it, and it's all coming into repetition.
Mm-hmm.
But to some point, it will make you burst out or something. You know, it's enough. Like
you have enough of it.
Yeah, kind of.
In the modern Mahayanists, they consider people who do that to you bodhisattvas. You ask some of the Mahayanas to say, the person who's really the pain in your back, right, is really a bodhisattva. To come here and allow you to develop your patience, allow you to develop your energy, allow you to develop your generosity of feelings. But of course, sometimes to me personally, I always think that, I always have a word to say, Buddhists are dumb, but not stupid. When you come to a certain stage, when you really feel the whole thing burning in you, it's good to bring it out, but in a proper manner. Don't go there and start to bang things and then yell and shout. Talk out nicely. Say, the way you do things, I'm not too happy with it. You're causing me a lot of suffering if these sort of things happen. Blah, no, whatever, and you can bring out and say it very nicely. And of course, if the person still does not want to comply to your demands, then tell him, I treat you like my bodhisattva. This is the way. You know, you see, the Buddha did not talk about a perfect world. He tells us the world is imperfect. So in our mind, we want the world to be perfect. We don't want to grow old, we don't want to get sick, we don't want to die. We want to be with nice, beautiful things. And look at the Four Noble Truths of Dukkha, right? We want to be good with good situations, we don't want to be with unfavorable situations. But can we really get that sort of things all the time or not? Maybe we might get once in a while. When we are in a nice, pleasant situation, what happens again? You want more of it, there you are. Our desire is never satisfied. So this is the way we are, and until we come to terms with this sort of thing, see, okay, how much do I want to go against nature? The more we want to go against nature, the more unhappy we are. Now, no matter what it is, you want to lead your own life, there will be some of those pests who come around, you know, to make life difficult for you. So when we talk about tolerance, it means that to be able to put up with it. Some people will say, okay, you know, I don't like him or her, and then I try to fight it, do something about it, you know, whatever. Well, you can, but when you do it, while we are doing all these things, we create more anguish in us then. Otherwise, then they would clear English to you. So you will start to say, okay, what I'm going to say to her or him, what I'm going to do next, and so on. Every night you're thinking about that. You know, it just hurts you. And that hurting is what we call stress. We try to go to the gym and de-stress ourselves, but at the same time, you know, while in the gym and you're distressing yourself, you think of this stressful thing. That's why the Buddha says we are stupid. So it's, in other words, you know, you sum all these things up, just look at our conflicts. How much conflict we have within us. I told you every day, you look at it, every moment there is conflict. You go, before you go out, you want to open your wardrobe up, you see, okay, now what clothes shall I wear? This one. Now, that's all these things, right? The choice itself is conflict. Until you settle the whole thing, you say, I'll wear this. You put this on, then after that, doesn't look nice, take it off again. Now, even until the time when you go out, go into the bus or taxi or whatever, go to the venue, say, I should have worn the pink one rather than this blue one. See how much burden we carry all the time. There's only one simple thing or dressing, right? Eating. You go to the restaurant, you choose the thing, okay, it's nice. But the other thing is nicer. Not in the noble truth, it says, not getting what we want. And what we want, we do not know. You get the point? When you get something, right? When you get something, you want to be happy, okay. I say, what's happiness? I keep on asking you, what's happiness? You say, oh, like this. Okay, assuming that you get this, what's going to happen next? But then I'll be contented, I'll be satisfied, I'll be happy, okay. How long? These are the sort of things that is doing a lot of work on us. Right? And that is what we mean by Mara. You heard about Mara? No? Mara is the devil. Right? And the devil is not outside. It's not created by anybody. The devil sometimes lie low. Right? But for people who are not well, who do not practice well, the devil comes up very often. The devil is called Mara. He's got three daughters. Greed, hatred, and delusion. Okay? Now, it comes up. And Mara hates the practicing Buddhists. Because Mara cannot gain entry into that, those practicing Buddhists cannot come out. You always got to be suppressed. And if you talk about this good type of conflict, is for us to struggle against this Mara all the time. That struggling, how to deal with these things. When you see something, okay, I like this. Mara comes out, I think it's a small Mara, maybe one of your granddaughters. Then you start to say, okay, this is beautiful, I'm going to take it. I'm not going to return to Ellen whom I borrowed. Ellen. Okay. Medium sized Mara came out. But then I say, okay, I like this. I think I might just picture that Ellen gets drowned. Then I have this watch. I think Mara is there already. So this is the sort of thing. It's constantly, we're in conflict. We know what's good. But unfortunately, there's also this bad side of this coming up. You want to pass your exam, to say, okay, I'm going to sleep, go to hell with the assignment. So, these are the sort of conflicts. You don't do the assignments, then you start to get guilty. It builds up and up. All the time, this are within us, this struggle. And as human beings, we know that this is this goodness in us, we know that there's also this badness in us. So that's why the Buddha, again in the Noble Eightfold Path, the Buddha mentioned the right efforts. Right? When look into what is good in us and try to bring out, make it grow, the good which we have. Right? And the goodness which you do not have, we try to make it grow, right? Make it come up. And for the bad things, the same thing. All this bad nature, like our greed, hatred, and all those things. We try to get rid of it. And for that, the few things which we do not have, like, you know, if you don't get angry on certain things and don't go and copy other people and make it our things. So when we start doing that, then it's much easier for us to deal with situations like that. when they start to develop good, good is the other end of evil. When good comes out, evil goes down. So it's, when you believe in the devil, don't think that the devil comes with horns and things like that. No? Or I like the Chinese when they say the devil means bad luck. No? And if you all come from certain background, you can see on the few days after Chinese New Year, I think it's about 16 or 17 days after Chinese New Year, a lot of people have went pray to a little lion statue. We all don't know. This is a very old tradition which we have among the Chinese. It's a little lion, you know?
Lion,
a statue of lion. And then they got these things, you know, to pray to all these things and to get rid of bad luck. So we go there and hammer the evil ones away, you see. So there's a little thing in white, and you know, take your shoes out and just like and then the nice little red ones you put up on top there. And then you can bribe the lion god with a piece of pork, you know, just wipe on the mouth. So we are trying to deal with evil in an external way, but which doesn't work. Don't say, you know, bad things goes away. It's just, you know, when evil arises in you, make sure that it does not get to the stage where you can act. You can never get rid of evil. It's there, like a seed. When it comes up, okay, look, do something about it. Twist the devil a bit so that it goes down. And how to do it? Now, mindfulness. Develop mindfulness. When you are mindful, you can see the fellow coming up. And the fellow coming up, okay, go. When the fellow is very big, it's very, very difficult to struggle with it. Alright? So, developing mindfulness will allow us to see defilement as it arises. Will allow us to see this part. When you see the craving arises, you can take some action inside us. I'm not going to allow this craving to go. Suppose I say I want this gold watch. It's craving already, right? If I say the pursuit is, I'll just con him to give me this watch. Or I'll just steal it from him. Now these are the pursuits you have. So what you can do is, okay, and now it's a nice one. I like it, but okay, the but. It's not mine, it's not right to do it, and whatever. Let's get rid of it. So I can return to him and he have his watch and there's no conflict. So this is the way we got to deal with things in a more practical way. Rather than having this theory and saying, oh, everything is influenced by this person or influenced by this person. We cannot be influenced by people unless we want to be influenced. The devil can't grip you unless you tell the devil, please get hold of me. Okay, I think I've spoken enough. Any more questions?
Does it apply to people with mental illness?
No. When they are really in the grips of mental illness, it's very difficult because they no longer have got the rational way of thinking. Right? Yes. But mental illness doesn't mean that somebody comes from the asylum. When people are extremely fanatical about the things, right, and so on, that is a form of mental illness. When you've got a very strong clinging and gripping, and it's so strong that, you know, you change your whole personality, that is also a form of mental illness. Right? So we cannot say that the fellow who goes around shouting and yelling and taking his clothes off in public are mad. There are also mad people who can wear coats and ties and then and also become preachers. I mean, I'm talking about things here. If you talk about the suicide bombers, are they sick or not in the brain? Just think about it. When people are really sick, then they do stupid things, right? To us. But then again, we do a lot of stupid things ourselves. Just write down. It's a good thing sometimes to remind ourselves. So, if we find it difficult through our mindlessness to track things which we do, then it's good sometimes to grab a piece of paper and write down the things you do. Then check and see, okay, today, out of 20 things I do, 18 are damn stupid. And that itself is a deterrent. Right? It keeps on being this warning to us. So we got to mindfulness is nothing more than keeping track of your experiences. How you get angry, how you get into trouble, how you get stressed and all these things. Just write down. Say, okay, today I met so and so, I don't like his face, therefore he stressed me. Why don't you like his face? It doesn't mean that you should like his face, but why the dislike brings you stress? Understand that. Once you understand that, the fellow can stand in front of you all the time and still you don't get affected by it. That means you don't allow that little devil of dislike to come up. Okay? This is the way we deal with things. And if you deal with it nicely, where are your life problems? That's why I can say why the Buddha has got no problems. I mean, people had create trouble with him a few times, but he survived. Lived the ripe old age of 80. All the time relax. Every time he sits down there, he goes into first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, and all this calmness and all these things. Why don't you and I get into this calmness? Because when you open our eyes, I disagree with it, I agree with it. And we make those things go round and round in us. So through our things, we get reborn one day, one moment as an animal, the moment, the next moment in hell, the next moment as hungry ghost, the next moment as human being, keep on going round and round. So do not despair, because the Buddha is there to help. So make sure that you get the right Buddha's teachings. Sometimes Mara's teaching can be disguised as Buddha's teachings as well. Be very careful. Just establish your mindfulness. Yes. Yeah.
So what is wisdom like? Can wisdom get itself? Is wisdom something that is not all of that?
The Buddha gave the answer to these people. You see, Buddha went to one of this place, and these people, this assembly told the Buddha and says, no. Yesterday somebody came and told us to go this way, and then the day before somebody told us this way, and so on. So there's so many different ways, right? And how are you going to make a choice? The Buddha says, don't believe in him just because he's your father. Don't believe in this just because it's in your holy books and all these things, right? He says, but what you got to go on is to test the teachings, but it has got to be based on how it can help you to have a better understanding of your own life. A better understanding in the sense that you do not say, outside there, somebody can help me outside. Better understanding that you yourself can help yourself. Right? And the Buddha came out, and that's why, a lot of Buddhists, we say, okay, what is this life? You got a lot of things which you're unhappy about, you got a lot of stress. And then the second noble truth, the Buddha says, all the stress comes from your own self, from your own body and your mind. And that's how it develops. Then comes the third one. Can we get rid of it now? Right. So we get rid of it, then how to do it? So that's the Four Noble Truths. So we've got to see, it's no point hearing somebody says, oh, just because they are very powerful people, or just because they dress nicely, they kind of talk to you, they must be telling the truth. It's not. My old trick is to tell people, all those of you who have heard me long enough, put your hand, I put my hand in my pocket, I say, okay, I've got a $1 coin here. What do you do? Right. So we either believe or no, don't believe. Right. Normally, but the Buddha taught us to say, open up your hand so that I can see for sure. Right? So that thing, knowing, is most important in Buddhism. Knowledge and wisdom comes together. There are a lot of people who say, don't have knowledge, because knowledge spoils you, makes you think too much, and therefore you go astray and all this. Now, that is a lot of hot air. Right? You got to know that, you got to be very sure of yourself. The more sure you are of yourself, the more confident you are. Rather than thinking if I believe in that spirit, will the spirit help me or not? Or he helped the person, but so far I haven't got any help yet. And always tell people, you believe in gods and spirits or God, they go on holiday sometimes. If those people who, if people who believe in these gods and spirits and gods and whatever do not suffer, then I told you before, 2.5 billion people in this world will not suffer. People who believe still get sick, they still get cancer, they still get accidents and so on. How do they explain for that? So for us to say we do not want to believe in this sort of things, nothing outside, all here. So to put in a very nice way, we empower ourselves with our own powers, right? not to do wrong to other people, but so that we can be of good use to other people as well. Again, look at the Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path. Look at your generosity, look at your patience, and look at the energy, right? Especially the generosity. Think of this stinginess and think a bit more about generosity. Not that, you know, you give away your money or give away everything you have, but try to be able to share a little bit. When you share a little bit, there'll be less conflict. And the story once of the Buddhist, my fellow Buddhists came and asked questions. He says, what happens if my neighbor come and steal my things if they're hungry? Then I say, are you a Buddhist or not? He said, yes. I says, if you're a good Buddhist, then your neighbor shouldn't go hungry when you've got things in your cupboard.